The following program is paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Each weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Now, here's Talking Health with Lisa Platt on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thank you very much for being here. Kyle Bailey again, filling the place of Lisa Platt as we take this time each week to explore the local response to the coronavirus pandemic from a lot of angles. We're joined, as always, today by County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer. Dr. Bob, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Well, thank you for having me.
And this time around, our other guest is Douglas County Commissioner Chris Boyce. Chris, thanks for carving out some time to be on with us today.
Glad to be here, Kyle. Thanks for the offer.
So, Dr. Bob, first of all, as we have been doing for the last few weeks, let's spend much of this first segment taking a look at COVID-19, where things stand, starting at the world level, the U.S., the state of Oregon, and in Douglas County.
Well, at a worldwide view, it's pretty grim. We're now over 4 million cases and 280,000 deaths, so a very high death rate and a very high rate of illness. We're starting to see big outbreaks in Brazil, Russia, Peru, and Ecuador. And so it really is spreading through the world. This is going to be important because the more it spreads through the world, the more it means that we're going to have to really eradicate it before we can open up cruises and international travel. In the U.S., we're still seeing lots of new cases a day. We're up to about 1.4 million cases in the U.S. and over 80,000 deaths. So it really is pretty grim. We're especially seeing continued disease in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. But then we're also starting to see big increases in Texas and Illinois and in Minnesota. Some of these have been associated with either prison outbreaks or with outbreaks in meat packing plants, and that's a concern. Oregon is doing pretty well. We have one of the lowest attack rates in the country. We're still seeing 20 to 80 new cases a day in Oregon, but that hasn't really increased over the last month now. But on the other hand, it hasn't really gone down. In Douglas County, we're 24 cases. We've really not had any cases now for a whole month, and so we're doing very, very, very well in Douglas County. Of the 24 cases, 22 have recovered. So there's only 2 active cases in Douglas County. Thank goodness there have been no deaths so far. So overall, the world is pretty grim, but it gets better and better as you dial into Douglas County.
As you have been researching this and spending a lot of time looking at data available from various sources, are there new things that you're seeing or new things that you're learning about COVID-19 and its impact?
Well, the new things we're learning, a couple of new things this week, is there appears to be a variant of this disease in kids, which is called the systemic multisystem inflammatory disease. And basically what this is a disease where the kid's immune system seems to kind of go haywire. They get really high fevers, they get red eyes, a strawberry tongue, a bad rash, and start to have lots of disease in their blood vessels, so they can wind up with little aneurysms in their heart. And so far, we've seen this in areas where there's been a lot of adult disease. We're seeing that in those areas, the kids have this disease. Now, this one is not as related to the virus, because only about half the kids test positive for the virus. But we think it's probably an unusual response to the virus in those kids who have it. So we're learning new things there. The other things we're learning is that the people who have this disease take a long time to get better. So although these people in Douglas County are no longer contagious, they are by no means resolved. And so there's still a lot of weakness, a lot of troubles needing oxygen, a lot of poor exercise tolerance, and lots of diarrhea. So even though these people are past the infectious stage, it's still a long time until they're going to be back to normal.
For the childhood diseases now, are these kids that, is this sort of an offshoot of COVID-19, or are these kids who have tested positive, or does it apply to both positive and negative?
Well, about half the kids have tested positive. The kids who haven't tested positive, most have antibodies, but there's still some who have neither antibodies nor the disease. And maybe that they're just developing the antibodies. But it seems to be in the areas where lots of adults have the disease. So first noted in Italy, where there are a lot of adult disease and death, and then noticed in the United Kingdom, and now noticed in the United States area. So a few weeks after you see the big rise in adults, you see this in kids. And it may well be just an immune response to the organism, which is way out of hand.
So do these kids then, and it's obviously early, but are they forecast to have long-term effects from these issues that they're having right now?
Well, we think so. We know already that a number of these kids have died, so it is a serious and potentially fatal disease. And in other diseases that cause aneurysm of the heart, these kids can have long-term heart disease.
Wow. And I just heard that a few days ago, and that's a good explanation of it, because I've heard various things, and what you've put out there is much more understandable than what I've heard so far. Things continue to evolve as this goes along. One of the areas, and I've gotten questions about this in the last few days, is the issue about masks. And it appears that we're seeing and hearing some different things from different, even federal officials. Is there a consistent response on that at this point? Are there some disagreements? Or are people just stating it differently and misunderstanding each other?
Well, there's a little bit of disagreement, and I think there's been terribly poor messaging. So shame on us for not being clearer about this. So there are two kinds of masks. There's the N95 mask, the high-level mask that people who are exposed to lots of the disease should wear. So, for example, imagine the anesthesiologist who's putting a tube into your lungs. They should have this high-level protective mask to prevent them from getting sick. But on the other hand, the rest of us should be wearing masks that don't have to be very high quality. They can just be cloth masks, homemade masks, and they're to prevent me, if I was asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic, from giving it to other people. So me wearing a mask is a sign of respect for you, because I don't want to make you sick.
Do you expect to see more locations requiring masks, at least in the short term, if not for a longer period of time?
I do expect that. I think the governor's recommendations are that more people wear masks. I was just on a call with the personal services workforce in Oregon, and there's going to be a recommendation at the barber or beauty shop that everybody there, both the workers and the clients, all wear masks. So I think you'll see more of it. And I hope we would see a little bit better modeling by our leaders in Washington. I saw this week that a number of people in the White House tested positive for disease, and that's going to happen. But I think what is unfortunate is that they really haven't been practicing this social distancing that they should have, and they have not been wearing masks when they cannot enforce social distancing. So perhaps with what's happened in the last few days, they'll take it more seriously now.
It was interesting because a couple of weeks ago, maybe a tad longer, it's all running together some days, the county commissioners and some of the folks involved, including yourself from the health side, had a press conference event out on the steps of the courthouse. People were wearing masks other than when they were talking, and they were maintaining space and all that. And it's been interesting to see, in contrast to that, contrast to what Douglas County did there, the number of presentations at all levels of government. I'm not going to throw rocks at any one particular one, but at all levels of government, where folks from the president on down have made appearances, where you see these public situations where nobody in the room that's part of the presentation even has a mask on, even if they were to take it off when they were speaking or making their part of the presentation. It's been interesting to watch that. A lot of people have taken note of that.
Well, I'm incredibly proud of the people in Douglas County. We have taken this seriously. I think that's the reason we've done so well. So, you know, I think some of it is luck, but it's also good to be good. And I think watching that kind of very good role model by our elected leaders and the other healthcare leaders in this county went a long way to show that it can be done. It didn't ruin things. It took a second to walk to the lectern, but it provided safety for the other people that were there. And I do care about all those people I work with. One of my greatest fears is that I come up with it and then I give it to people that I love or people that I work with. And I really don't want to make other people sick. So if you for the last month, I always have a mask or a balaclava around the neck.
Commissioner Boyce, I wanted to ask you, just in terms of talking about that press event, doing that with masks on, how did that feel to you?
Well, certainly not normal, Kyle, but it's something that's necessary, and for two reasons. You know, obviously we're all, I think we share in Dr. Danhofer's fear in that somehow we contract this virus and then spread it to someone that we care about or anyone for that matter. So there's that side, and then there's the side of, you know, really the public information side where we're wanting to not only set an example, but also just to be there and doing that, reminding people that it's an added precaution that we feel like has led to the success that we've had here in the county, and we are going to continue to need to implement that if we want to continue to be able to open things up and move forward.
Dr. Bob, I wanted to ask you again, I know we've covered this before about washing masks, but the sense I'm getting as I talk to folks, a lot of people have multiple masks now. Some that are mainly just at home may have one, but like a hat that you might put on or a jacket that you wear infrequently, those don't always get it washed as often as they should. Talk about the aspect of washing whatever types of masks people have.
Well, the closer they are to moisture, the more they should be get washed. So your underwear, your mask, although are sort of wet with sweat and bodily fluids, they probably should be washed once a day. Now, I will tell you that if the goal is to go without a mask or to wear it a second day, I would certainly wear it a second day. But I think as the masks get more available, people have several of them. And what I've noticed, especially, is that people with any sense of style now have lots of masks, and they kind of use their mask as part of their wardrobe, and some of them are really quite attractive.
It's been interesting to watch that just as a total sidelight. The second mask I got came from a family member who had made it. It happened to be an Oregon duck mask. Worked perfect for me. People got a kick out of that, although there were some Beaver fans who took issue with that, but just all in good, you know, all in good fun. There are different aspects about how you make those, and the seamstress folks who do those seem to be very dedicated to putting a lot of those out there. Even saw a post probably an hour or so ago, just on a social media page for a neighborhood where somebody has continued to make them on their own with their own money, and just put a post out and let people know that at their particular address for this neighborhood Facebook group, that masks were out, wrapped, and people could come by and pick them up, and there was no charge. And you've seen some interesting things there. I mean, helping your neighbors literally in that way, it's great for people to be neighborly, but I mean, this is really taking that even a step farther.
It surely is, and that's one of the things that makes me so proud to live here, is the fact that so many people have come together. I think we at DPHN here have distributed over 9,000 masks, and we have another several thousand coming. So there's been great community spirit in making these work. We've had several groups in the county making these, and I think we can all be very proud as a county.
Going to take a break. Back with County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Danhofer and Douglas County Commissioner Chris Boyce. A lot of things to cover today. We'll talk about phase one reopening potential for the county, social distancing, mental health aspect of this, exercise, and a lot more on this special Talking Health. Kyle Bailey in for Lisa Platt. Back in a couple minutes, 4:20 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hi there. Thanks for listening on your way home. 4:22, the afternoon report coming up with Douglas County's news team. Kyle Bailey for Lisa Platt. As again, we use our time on Talking Health to explore the public health ramifications of COVID-19 and cover it from a lot of different angles. Joined again today, as always, by County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Danhofer and Douglas County Commissioner Chris Boyce on with us as well. Both of you involved in working on all the document, all the pages that went into the county's application for Phase 1 reopening. That went to the governor's office on Friday. I wanted to ask each of you to kind of talk about your role and some of what's in this document. Commissioner Boyce, we'll start with you.
Sure. So actually, we submitted that as soon as the governor's office released the email address to submit it on Thursday. So we actually submitted on Thursday. We were among the earliest counties to get our submission in. My role in that really is just to review the application and all the information that was provided by Dr. Nannenhofer and the other folks in the medical profession within the county. You know, we obviously had to coordinate everybody in the county doing that work, from everything from facility, you know, the number of hospital beds that we had available to the number of gowns we had and all the different PPE. So Dr. Nannenhofer coordinated with all the medical community to get that information. My role really was just to review all that information, compare it to what I had received from the governor as far as requirements and make sure that we weren't missing anything, and then to add into sort of the county's piece, which is what our plans are for additional breakouts. You know, if there was some sort of a surge, we would have the ability to, you know, rent motel rooms or whatever else we were doing, and to make sure that we had all of those plans in place, and then submit the application.
Dr. Bob, what about your role in all this?
Well, I put this stuff together and wrote it, but really it's a lot of work that others have done in the community. So the first thing we had to show is that we had a declining number of cases and that we weren't overwhelming the hospital. Since we have no one in the hospital with this in Douglas County, we clearly weren't overwhelming the hospital. Second thing we had to show is that we could do testing. And as you know, we've done this drive-through testing clinic two or three times a week for 2 months now. And so we were able to easily show that we're able to do testing. We've got this great partnership with Quest Labs where they do these and have no charge to the patients who get the tests. We then had to show that the hospital had adequate amounts of personal protective equipment, and both Mercy and Little Round Claw Hospital had that. And then we had to show that if there was an uptick in the number of infections, that we had the public health staff here so that we could track those cases and ensure that we took care of the contact with quarantine. And we were able to show that we're able to do all of that. So I'm fairly confident that we're going to hear from the state in the next few days that we're good to go.
It was interesting. I have glanced through some of the applications the other counties have submitted. I did that a little bit, I guess, yesterday when I had a moment. And it was interesting because, honestly, I was expecting a form that came from the governor's office. And in reality, everybody submitted it differently. Some were shorter than others. Some were very lengthy. Chris, I'm sure you've looked at some of the other presentations, and they seem to, and I didn't go through the specifics in terms of what had to be in them, but I was just sort of glancing through how they were presented. Everybody seemed to do it a little bit differently.
You know, that's true, Kyle, and I don't know if you noticed what Dr. Nannenhofer just said, but the bottom line is, when he filled out the application, he basically made my job really easy. But compared to the other counties, you know, we had counties, as you know, clear back on April 24th, we had a press conference and we released some information about a letter that I had written. And I had written this letter essentially having kept up on what we anticipated the governor's requirements were going to be. And I sent that letter to four other counties in southwestern Oregon to get their approval to sign on to, which they all did. And we sent that to the governor. That sort of started a chain reaction throughout the state of counties essentially writing their own plans. And I had read the governor's information and followed it well enough to know that was not necessary, that what she was going to be looking for is some specific criteria that we had to match. So there was no need to really go out and write our own plan as far as, you know, what sort of restrictions that we wanted to implement and all that. But the other thing is, it was very frustrating, I think, for all of us because of the language that was being used in the weeks leading up to May 8th, which was the first day that we could technically submit, quote, applications. And we all sort of assumed that there would be an application that needed to be filled out. And we didn't find out until just days ahead of time that there was, in fact, no application that was state was going to send you that you needed to fill out. You sort of needed to write your own and just make sure that you essentially checked all the boxes from the requirements that the state had listed. And Dr. Dannenhofer and his team were well ahead of the game in doing that, which is what was instrumental in us being able to submit our application very early. And Dr. Dannenhofer, of course, you can look at our application, see that it was very professionally done, all the information's there. I did a fantastic job in coordinating that effort on behalf of Douglas County.
Now, the governor announced last Thursday that counties deemed eligible to reopen in this phase one parameter could do so as early as Friday. Is there any sense as to when the governor will make the announcement as to which counties are going into phase one?
Well, before Friday. We are all very anxiously awaiting. We really don't have anything to give us any sort of guidance on when that might come, other than the governor, you know, in our various phone calls with her, has said that they hope to have those applications turned around fairly quickly. That's really all the detail that we've received from this point from the state. And obviously we and many, many folks in the community are waiting very anxiously in order to get word.
I sent an email to one of the press folks in the governor's office a bit ago, and of course have not heard back yet. It wasn't very long before we began the interview to ask about that. So that will be interesting to see. I guess, Chris, for people who are watching this, I would presume that you're looking at the fact that whether it's business people or whoever is going to get to make changes if this goes through, that they shouldn't be waiting until Friday to hear this. They should be getting ready now.
We have restaurants and hair salons and all sorts of other types of businesses in the community that are literally checking in with me every single day. You know, just to reopen a restaurant for dine-in, they've got to put in a food order. They've got to have extra cleaning supplies. They have to have PPE themselves. It's critical that we get the word on this as soon as possible. I mean, in reality, we may have permission to open some things up and start moving a little bit on Friday. But I'm anticipating that the more days we go between now and finding out that we're officially going to get that green light, that'll just be a few more days that it's going to take for people to get geared up and get going. So we need to know right away if we can, if there's any way we can. We've been pushing on that pretty hard.
As I was out over the last few days, a couple of the restaurants that I got takeout for and was in a couple of situations, they talked about some of the things they were going to do to be getting ready. And in one case, they were planning to start Friday if it was deemed permittable to do so by then. Another said they were working a lot of things, but they figured they would actually wait till the next Monday to give themselves the weekend to just be absolutely sure they had everything put together. And of course, as you said, there's a lot of requirements. I've looked at sort of the in the weeds type of thing that maybe the public hasn't seen that you folks have seen as well, you know, regarding very specific guidelines for restaurants and for hair salons, et cetera. And a lot of work is going to be involved in getting ready for this. And I know the folks I talked to were very concerned that they did it correctly so that that they were okay.
And that's true, Kyle. We absolutely don't want to have to back up from this. And, you know, we want to make sure that once we get things started to head the right direction, that we don't have to stop and go backwards again. That's going to be heartbreaking for a lot of folks. And we have to be diligent. I mean, I fear that we're getting into this sort of feeling as a community that's sort of nonchalant and isn't that big of a deal. And you see certain stores in the community that are packed and people out and about doing their thing. And we're grateful for the job that the medical professionals have done in managing the crisis in our community. But let's not forget that this virus is still out there and people can still get it. So we want to be diligent about making sure that we're being as safe as possible when we get things open back up so that we don't have to go back through having to shut everything back down again.
So, Dr. Bob, from the public health side, what else should residents know about getting ready to reopen, or maybe some concerns you have about the process?
Well, the concerns we have about the process is as people start to do things and gather more, that this disease could spread. So we've used a lot of fire analogies during this pandemic. And the analogy I'm using now is that we've been through a time here where the weather's been cold and damp and drizzly, and we've put out most of the fires here, but there's still little pockets there. And we're coming into a time where it's going to get hot, dry, and windy, and things could just take right up where they left off. And so we are concerned. We're concerned because we've seen some big outbreaks, especially in meatpacking plants in the Midwest, in prisons, all around the country, and in other workplaces. So as people start to loosen up a little bit, we are concerned that it is going to spread.
And you read, you know, we, all of us are reading a lot of things extensively, and not everything that comes out is deemed to ultimately be accurate. But yeah, I've read just the past couple of days about a situation in another state where folks were, as things were reopening there a little sooner, were pushing things a bit far and had more people over to what would be deemed by many kind of an ill-advised gathering. And then somebody was there, was asymptomatic, and ended up spreading it. And suddenly, just from one gathering, a number of new cases.
Yeah, that's exactly what we expect. So we especially worry about things where there's big groups, especially indoor groups that are there for a long period of time. And I think that's why the Oregon recommendations are great, because they spell out what should happen and then try and limit those high-risk exposures.
All right, going to take a break on Talking Health. More when we come back. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, Douglas County Commissioner Chris Boyce. More things ahead in our next segment, 4:35 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is Talking Health. Kyle Bailey again for Lisa Platt as we take this time each week to explore the public health response and related topics regarding COVID-19 and its impact in Douglas County. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, Douglas County Commissioner Chris Boyce in with us this afternoon. Dr. Bob, we were just talking about concerns about reopening and people not pushing things too far, which goes to my next point, is talking about social distancing, sort of the myths versus what you believe the medical facts are related to this, as people start to look towards potentially having the phase one reopening on Monday. For instance, gatherings, the gathering size moves up to 25 at this point. But for now, getting through this week, what about close friends who are often together in prior time? Are they family enough to be getting together if they stay 6 feet apart, or no?
So when we look at the risks are highest if somebody is symptomatic. So if you're symptomatic, stay home. They also tend to be high in people who are pre-symptomatic. That is in the 24 hours or 48 hours before you come up with symptoms. And since we don't know that, that's a risky time. The next risky thing is when you're together indoors. Outdoors is much safer than indoors. The next is it gets increasingly more dangerous as you get closer and closer. So people who have very close contact, like spouses, are very high risk, and almost all spouses get infected. But with friends, you know, you can still have dinner with people and stay 6 feet apart. So my son came for dinner yesterday, and he sat at the other end of the table, and we were 6 feet apart the whole time. And so that was a safe but totally enjoyable Mother's Day for him to come and have dinner with us. So that's the kind of stuff that I would recommend. Normally he would come and give his mom a big hug, but in this case, they stayed apart, and it was almost as good as usual.
It was interesting to watch some things on social media over the weekend as people were trying to be creative. I saw a private preschool from a church in the Portland area, and as they were wrapping up going into kind of the graduation phase of this preschool, they had a term, and I can't remember off the top of my head now what it was called, but they have a large parking lot, and basically everybody had their SUVs or whatever they were driving with kids in the back of them. They were probably 10, 12 feet apart. And some of the person who was sort of leading the ceremony was pointing at different kids. While it's not the norm, I think it was probably certainly more enriching to do something like that and at least be able to see each other from a distance than not doing anything at all.
I think you're exactly right. And I think we're seeing incredible creativity in this pandemic. You know, see people with all these great-looking masks. I see people doing amazing things to do social distancing. As I was at a place the other day, and they handed my food to me on a long tray so they didn't have to come within 6 feet. So the creativity and the inventiveness of the American public will never cease to amaze me. Because it's just great what people are doing. And I think we could find great and amazing ways to do graduation. I understand there are a couple of celebrities that are going to be giving commencement speeches for different high schools who want them to do it. So think of how amazing it would be to have Bill Gates or Barack Obama do your commencement speech.
It was interesting, and we'll talk about exercise in a bit, but as I was out to getting some Saturday and taking a long walk, as I went through different locations, saw couples and who I presume to be families, for instance, along the river, enjoying a portion of Stuart Park, very separated off from folks, and other people where you might have two couples and a greater distance there, still getting to see each other, but maintaining that space. And as you said, being outdoors with the great weather we had the past few days made that sort of thing a lot easier.
Yeah, being outdoors is a much lower risk. And there's so much more airflow. The chance that you could go ahead and spread this to somebody 6 feet in the outdoors is pretty small. And so being outside and doing things outside is so important. I think people are getting a little depressed being at home, being in the house all the time. And so I really encourage people to go out. So I, too, did a long walk yesterday, and it was just great.
Commissioner Boyce, the county has talked about this, but maybe reiterate some of what the county did to reopen the courthouse, the related facilities, and still maintain that social distancing for employees and folks that need to come in and do business.
Sure. So for us, it was pretty simple. We just told Michael Kurtz, the HR director, that we wanted to start heading back that way, and he worked with all the department heads and the priority was safety. So if departments didn't have enough room for their staff to be inside the building and work 6 feet apart, then obviously we made arrangements for those certain staff members to stay home. We implemented the same rules that you've heard over and over again. If you're sick, stay home. If you have a fever, stay home. We actually had someone from Douglas Public Health here in the morning screening all the staff people as they came into the courthouse for fevers and handing out masks to those who needed them. And we encouraged the hand washing and sanitizing and all the things that have to happen. And then again, certain spacing at the counters to be able to assist the public and all those things. But, the main goal for us was to be very cautious in the beginning to really figure out what we were dealing with. We totally anticipated that we'd have an increase in cases along with an increase in testing, which we saw, and we want to get out in front of it and then try to get back to serving the public as soon as we could, which we did. And it's been an interesting experience. One of the highlights, I think, is we have so much work the county does. It's dependent upon volunteers in the community, and one of the main things that they do is you have retired senior citizens volunteer to serve other seniors who are in need meals throughout the county. And those retired senior citizens were of among the highest at risk from this disease. So obviously we want to give them an opportunity to shelter in place and stay home. So we reassigned other county employees whose jobs were not as essential to help serve those seniors, and that's just part of the work that we did in order to keep things moving here at the county. And that work, I've done some of that myself, is very rewarding work for those people that don't normally get to do that sort of thing. So those are a few things that we did, and again, we're still not what we would call back to normal, but we're working hard to make sure that we're serving the public as we should be.
And for taking meals out, for example, folks from the county and from the different groups that help with this have talked about how important it is, because the folks that are getting those meals, oftentimes that's the only personal contact, even socially distant, that they have in an entire day.
That's true. And, you know, we even had to modify the way that we did that. And it was hard on some of those folks because, you know, I've been out delivering those meals with Meals on Wheels. And when you knock on the door, the person that you're delivering the meal to is so excited to see you and sit and talk and chat for a few minutes. And as you mentioned, you know, that might be the only social interaction they have through the day. But now, you know, we have to leave the meal outside the door and knock and stand back and make sure that, you know, it doesn't get eaten by a neighborhood stray dog before the person inside comes and picks it up. And so it's changed the program a little bit, but it's still very important work and something that we hold in very high in priority and want to make sure that we can facilitate happening.
How have people been responding, folks who do need to come into the courthouse to conduct business? You made it clear that if people could do things online, get forms filled out or call on the phone, email, that's the preferred method. But for folks who do have to come in and submit a document or whatever, how have they responded to all the changes inside the courthouse?
They seem to be responding well. And, you know, it's been pretty low traffic for the last week or so. Yeah, the place isn't packed by any means. It's been pretty quiet. But there are folks that have had to come in for different reasons to handle business within the courthouse. They certainly understand the guidelines and the restrictions, and they've been courteous and professional as they should be, and we've been able to work through that. It's been really no problem at all. You know, one of the things that I'm concerned about, whether it's courthouse business or the veterinary clinic or the hairstylist or whoever, you know, there's getting to be a considerable backlog for business. And, you know, those kind of folks were busy anyway. I mean, you own pets. You know how difficult it is to get in to see the veterinarian sometimes. But now, you know, all of these businesses that have been shut down for weeks and weeks not only have their normal clientele, but they've got this backlog that they're going to have to work through. And it's going to be, you know, businesses reopening on a limited schedule, limited seating and limited occupancy and so on. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes for a while.
It's going to require a lot of patience. I believe the guidance for beauty salons, barbers, et cetera, is appointment only. And of course, lots of sanitization and even some record keeping as well to assure that they remain safe in how they present their services. And if something did happen or somebody came through who turned out to later have this, that they could deal with it. Dr. Bob, you talked about this contact tracing. And it's I find it kind of fascinating, but you know, you look at the idea of businesses having to now, in some cases, devote some of their time to you know, maybe better record keeping. And maybe honestly, it's something that should have been there all along.
Well, we're thinking that some of these things businesses might have been doing before, but they'll be doing now. So, for example, let's think of that person who works at a barbershop who comes down with the disease. It would be really nice to know who they were in contact with the day before so you could contact them and you can say, look, the barber who did your hair yesterday came down today with coronavirus and is sick, so you now should be quarantined and or tested. And that's how we think we're gonna go ahead and stop this in its tracks.
And I think a lot of places like that, you've got records, but now it's just going to be probably putting it in a better form, maybe have it typewritten, you know, on a computer form that you create or whatever, and doing things like that so that it would be easier to access if there was the need for it. We've got another segment when we come back. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer and Douglas County Commissioner Chris Boyce. It's Talking Health in for Lisa Platt, Kyle Bailey, 449 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here this afternoon. Talking Health, Kyle Bailey for Lisa Platt. At the afternoon report coming up with Douglas County's news team. All our information up at 541radio.com, the 541 Radio app, and the KQEN Facebook page. as we update information 7 days a week during this COVID-19 situation. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, Douglas County Commissioner Chris Boyce. I wanted to look at for a little bit here on the mental health aspect of this. It might be worth reviewing for folks in Douglas County, while we've had all the restrictions that we've had, to know that many other people have had many more restrictions. Just in the last few days, I was communicating with somebody in the Denver area where the case number is higher. They're in an urban area and a suburb, and while we have certain sectors of the business community that have been open here with certain social distancing aspects, et cetera, there even more has been closed down for them. That was interesting to hear and to think about how they've had to deal with even more restrictions. Got friends who live in a different country where they literally, except for one person in the family, couldn't go outside of their apartment at all for 7 weeks and have just recently been able to do so. And whether you're at that level or at the level we've got here, Dr. Bob, this has been kind of a stress time for mental health. And I know I'm seeing a lot of articles that say the mental health implications of COVID-19 are going to be around for a long time.
Yes, I believe so. So two of the biggest mental health diseases we deal with are anxiety and depression. And during this time, probably all of us are a bit anxious and a bit depressed by what's going on. So we think this is a tough time for people. That is complicated by the fact that some people are now having economic issues. They may be a little bit lonely because they're not seeing friends and they're not exercising. So this is a time we're really encouraging people to take good care of themselves, to get some exercise, maybe do a half marathon walk even, and to eat well and to enjoy the things you can enjoy. And then if you do need some mental health help, almost all of the mental health people in town are working by telemedicine.
And we're going to go in depth on the mental health aspect tomorrow on Inside Douglas County at 12:30. I don't remember the provider's name, but we have one of the folks from Compass Behavioral Health that are going to be on with us. One of the things Thursday, as the day was progressing, and I was looking at what was coming from the governor's office and looking ahead to, okay, here's what is going to be in place when we get to phase one. Here's what's not. For me personally, it was, here's all the events that I'm not helping with this summer or emceeing. And for 20 years, a lot of those have been, a big aspect for me. And I had to scratch my head a little bit and try to contemplate that. And I'm still trying to work through that. The term I'm using is the summer that wasn't. And definitely, Dr. Bobby, it's a challenge now to stay positive with some of that.
It can be a challenge, although we're beginning to see some things that are really positive. I think I've seen more kids riding their bikes and more families walking than I ever have before. As people walk, they're counting the number of teddy bears in the windows. I think people are helping each other out by making masks. We yesterday put up a little free library outside our house for people to come by and stop and pick up books. So this is a tough time, but there's lots of good things that are going on. And I've always been tremendously impressed by the positive nature of people who live in this county.
And exercise during this time now and in phase one, presuming that we get there Friday or whatever we do, there's some things involving gyms that can open with social distancing protocols and other health facilities, and people can get out and use those machines and get more exercise that way as well. For right now, where we are when it comes to exercise, what should you be doing? What should you not be doing?
Well, the easiest exercise right now to do is walking, jogging, or riding your bike. Any of those are perfectly fine. We think the risk on those is minuscule, so please do those. Soon the gyms will open and people can do other kinds of things on machines and whatever. But just going out and enjoying this lovely weather that we've had is a great thing. And walking is a remarkably good exercise for almost all of us.
Chris Boyce, Douglas County Commissioner, I'm curious how you've sort of focused your energy on the mental health side, or times when you see the weight of all of this upon you as a public official. How are you dealing with it?
You know, it's a challenge sometimes, Kyle, and the biggest part is, you know, just trying to respond to people professionally, kindly, when people are frustrated and they're angry and they're upset and they look to us to answers. And sometimes they look to us to override the governor's executive order and give the county permission to open. And, you know, all of those things we feel like we're ready to do and we would like to do. but it's difficult because we really just don't have the authority. And the last thing I want to do is tell, you know, some business owner that he should go ahead and do that, and then, you know, he has some consequence. So it's challenging. But for us, you know, we just try to stay positive. We've got a great bunch of people like Dr. Danenhofer and his team around the community that have really helped with that, because the county's response to this epidemic or pandemic actually has been so good. There's a lot of things to be grateful for right now. And watching the community respond, like Dr. Danenhofer said, also is one of those things where, you know, you just see people going out of their way to try to help other people who are being affected by it. So we just got to stay focused on the positive things and try not to let it bother you. It's not been that difficult.
Got about 90 seconds left. Chris, again, about the phase one reopening, I know you've got information up on the county website and the Douglas Public Health Network site. What would you say in terms of encouraging folks to be prepared for the potential of that as soon as Friday?
So the very best thing that folks can do is to be signed up for our newsletter, because as soon as we know anything, it goes out in that newsletter. It literally is the best source for the latest and most accurate information. You can go to the county's webpage, which is www.co.douglas.or.us, and in the upper right-hand corner, click for the sign up to the newsletter, and you'll have the most accurate information. As soon as we hear anything from the state, we're going to blast it out there so that everybody knows.
And Dr. Bob, you're one of the governor's advisors. How is that process evolving?
Well, we're still giving advice, and I'm very impressed that she really is looking for the best advice, and she doesn't always agree with it, but she's always very good at listening to good advice.
All right, County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Danenhofer and Douglas County Commissioner Chris Boyce, as we look at the county's response and where the county's at in relationship to the COVID-19 situation. Thanks to both of you for being on this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
4:59, it'll be a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com.
The preceding program was paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.